Hello and welcome to another edition of Inside Network Marketing. This is your host, Len Clements, and this is show number 19, Tuesday, September 11th, 2012. And this show is one that I really didn't intend to do for at least a couple of more weeks. I know it's been a few weeks since I've done one of these Inside Network Marketing podcasts. I'm working on a new website having to do with the Inside Network Marketing theme. It's going to be a video, audio, blog type website, similar to what guys like Troy Dooley and Ty Tribble and those guys are doing, although mine will probably be focused a little bit more on the audio end of it as opposed to video or text. But there'll be a commentary section under each blog entry that I do so we can have discussions about it, various other things like that, a lot more interactive type of a forum. And I wanted to launch that at a point in time in which I can regularly contribute to it. That's not now. I am actually working on three different cases as an expert witness, which were all delayed in such a way where they all kind of overlapped at the same time, the most time-intensive part of it. So I've been kind of cocooning for the last few weeks and still probably have another week or two to go on that before I'm going to really have enough freedom to really start regularly contributing to the Inside Network Marketing side, which I'll unveil at that time. But this is some commentary that can't wait. I made a mistake by waiting on this once already. I'm not going to do it this time. So I got to get this out here. This is going to involve Zeek Rewards, primarily the aftermath after the SEC has shut them down, because there is just so much BS and misinformation going on out there. There is so much stuff that should have no credibility at all that's being promoted by various other commentators and so forth out there, critics and watchdogs, whatever you want to call them. And just the fact they're even acknowledging this and this kind of stuff and kind of imparts credibility to it. And I need to just really start clearing some of this stuff up. Because it's for one thing, it's giving people hope that there's actually going to be a Zeek Rewards again. I'm going to tell you right up front, before I get into the detail of this, there is not. Zeek Rewards is done. It's gone. It's not coming back any place in the world. And I'll explain why in a minute. There's not going to be any lawsuit against the SEC. And even if there is, there's no possible way it's going to succeed. So don't donate money to that. But again, I'll get into the details of that in a minute, kind of jumping ahead. I'm going to assume, just for the sake of brevity, that you already know what penny auctions are. You already know a little bit about the basics of what Zeek Rewards was. And so I'm not going to get into a lot of detail about its history and how their comp plan worked and things like that, other than what the red flags were, what all the warning signs were that so many people in this industry who had credibility, some was in some position of authority, and I'm talking about a lot of people, by the way, so don't think I'm picking on any one or two people, that they certainly should have seen and recognized. And then, of course, ultimately, why it absolutely was an illegal pyramid, why it probably was an unregistered security, and may even possibly be, although I'm still of the mind that it wasn't, although the SEC is in disagreement with me on this, a Ponzi scheme. And I'll explain the three different distinctions and my case behind that in just a minute. Most of you, I assume, that are receiving this has probably already at least received, if I don't know how many of you actually read the whole thing, but a 35-page expose that I did about Zeek Rewards, which I was literally two pages away from finishing when the SEC actually came in and closed them down. And by the way, before I get any comments back on this, technically, Zeek Rewards closed themselves down. Okay, but here's how that works. The SEC investigates them for weeks or months. We know for now that it was definitely going back at least several months. They were under investigation. Their home state AG was investigating them for at least 2 months. And the SEC makes a case for why they think they were a pyramid scheme, a Ponzi scheme, and unregistered security. It was the trifecta. They hit them on all three. They said they were all three of these. Now, what the SEC does in this case is they file an action where they basically would go to a judge and say, here's our case. We want an immediate emergency asset freeze. So they can't dispose of any of their money once they know that, we're investigating them. Because, of course, all this investigation was secret. So here's our case for why we need that. And the judge signs off on it and says, yes, boom, asset freeze. You guys are locked down. Before they did that, they went to Paul Burks, the owner and founder of Zeek, and said, here's what we got. Here's what we're going to do. Now, do you want to shut this down and sign a settlement, pay a fine, and just go away? I'll get into that more detail in a minute, too. And he said yes. So he locked the place down and said, I'm taking the deal, and we're done. Now, had he said no, we're going to fight this, we're going to keep the company open, literally the very next day, the SEC would have brought this emergency shutdown order to a judge and said, here's our case for why they're all three of these things. They would have caught the asset freeze, and the SEC would have shut them down. And you would have seen SEC guys at the home office putting locks on the front door and carrying out boxes of stuff out the back door. So, Yeah, if you want to play semantic little technical games and say the SEC didn't really shut them down, well, the SEC in their own press release says SEC shuts down Zeke Reward. So I'm going to go with them on this, and just we're going to call it obviously what it is. The SEC shut them down. Now, I want to get into a little bit of background here just so you understand kind of the premise of what I'm coming from, because some of this will get in kind of technical, legal minutiae and what defines a pyramid and a Ponzi and things like that. I'll try to make this in as basic a case as possible. If you haven't read the 35-page report, go back into the archives of the MarketWave Alerts, and you can see the report and you can read it. It's all footnoted and everything. My problem is that I saw that Zeke Rewards was changing. It was in a state of metamorphosis. They launched, the penny option side launched back, I believe it was in March of 2010. That was Zeekler. Zeekler.com, that was the penny auction site. Zeke Rewards, the MLM company, based on selling bids to the penny auction site, launched in January of 2011. Okay, so beginning of 2011. Around August of 2011, when they got word that they'd set this up in some pretty shaky ways, a lot of red flags, they hired this sort of dream team, this sort of all-star team of MLM attorneys and consultants and compliance experts and things like this to come in and fix everything, which is great. And I compliment for that. I think that was a very sincere effort. But in the process of doing that, there was a lot of renovation. So you can just imagine, you know, all the dust and everything around and all the people like working and changing things and the jackhammers and the painters and whatever. So I'm thinking, like, instead of making any commentary on what it was or what it is now, which will be different in a few days, or what it might become, I'm just going to hang back and see what eventually emerges from this thing, where other people were commenting on it either as a critic or as a promoter of it, essentially, and saying, well, here's all these great things that they're doing as part of the renovation process. Well, and then the critics were saying, well, here's all the reasons why it's not getting fixed right. And I'm thinking, like, look, when they're done changing, I'll evaluate it and I'll make some commentary on it. And I waited too long. I did. I started reviewing it for about 3 months before the expose was finished, started writing it about 2.5 weeks before I finished it. And I remember waking up in the morning, I had about one page left of section about taxes and another one left about comp plans. There were some technical little comp plan issues I was waiting for some answers on. Went online to see if some people had responded to some questions about that, thinking I could finish up, you know, my review today. And instead I saw all these notices about the home office being closed. And I remember thinking, like, come on, SEC, couldn't you wait like 48 more hours? Just 2 more days. So like, I got this thing out after the fact, but I can assure you, I've worked on that for many, many weeks before I actually published it. Anybody who knows me knows it takes me all afternoon to write one coherent paragraph. I can't write 35 pages in 35 hours, I assure you. But anyway, I went ahead and published the review sort of as just, I guess, a historical tool to look back on and say, okay, well, here's what happened and why it happened, and maybe we'll have a better idea of how to avoid this in the future. Now, since then, there has been supposedly some kind of a class action lawsuit that's going to be filed against Zeke Rewards. I've spoken to, I think there's two of them out there now. They'll eventually get combined, but I spoke to the lead counsel on one of them, J. Calvin Cunningham out of North Carolina. One thing I want to clear up right up front, because this is complete BS that's out there, J. Calvin Cunningham was never sanctioned by the state bar for cheating his clients. If you'll notice, if you look closely, it's J. Calvin Cunningham III. J. Calvin Cunningham Jr. is his father, and that is who, about 3 years ago, got reprimanded by the state bar for padding one particular client's billing. That is not J. Calvin Cunningham, who is running the class action lawsuit against Zeke Rewards. So all the stuff you see out there online about him cheating his clients, that's not him. That is untrue. Okay, J. Calvin Cunningham III has never been sanctioned by the bar. Now, he is creating this class action lawsuit against Zeke Rewards, which I and a lot of others hope does go forward, because I would love for there to be a day in court when all of this can be hashed out and we can know, were they really a pyramid or a Ponzi or a registered security? Because right now we won't, because Paul Burks settled. He took the deal, he agreed to shut the company down, pay $4 million in fines, and just go away. Now, there may possibly still be criminal charges. And, of course, there could be a class action lawsuit against them if this goes forward. So we may eventually see a day in court for all of this to get hashed out. But here's one thing that is not going to happen. This supposed class action lawsuit against the SEC, where they say, now, I've heard credibility being given to the allegation that the SEC has admitted they've made some mistakes. They've done some further investigation, and they're starting to see some mistakes they made in their original complaint against Zeek. Here's why that can't possibly be true, because there is no further investigation. They're done. Paul Burks signed off on the agreement. They're done. It's over. So they're not doing any kind of further investigation. Any law firm, and there was S&R Denton was the one supposedly was going to be working on behalf of Fun Club USA. That was the name of the group that was going to sue the SEC on behalf of all these Zeek Rewards distributors. S&R Denton has already dropped out of this case. Obviously, they've, you know, wised up or something. Somebody clued them in on the fact that the SEC is probably right. And by the way, the SEC only has to be right on one out of three. Okay, a pyramid, Ponzi, and registered security. They can be wrong on two out of three of those, and they still had a valid reason to shut them down and freeze their assets. And as you're about to see, they were absolutely right on at least one out of three. So even if someday such a lawsuit is filed, and by the way, it has not been filed yet, so the money you're donating, and supposedly there's supposed to have been well over $100,000 donated already to this group of people who, by the way, I don't know them, and I don't know their mind. I mean, they honestly have good intentions here, but it's obviously somebody is not giving them proper legal guidance because, first of all, this everything's in receivership. The receiver is already trying to get all the money back and everything, so you know, I don't think any such a lawsuit would even go forward, even if there was one filed. But again, if you sue the SEC for this, you've got to prove the SEC was wrong in all three areas. They had no valid reason to shut this company down. But the owner of the company already agreed to shut the company. He didn't admit, by the way, any guilt. Paul Burke said, I'm not admitting anything, but I agree to just shut the company down and pay this fine and wrap the whole thing up. So, no, there's no lawsuit against the SEC. There probably isn't going to be one. You're wasting your money if you donate to that because, again, even if it was allowed to go forward, which is not, it'll get the court will just drop it the moment it gets filed. But even if it did, there's no possible way this lawsuit can succeed. Now, I'm going to get into why. First of all, let me just go over into some of the, like I said, the warning flags. Because, again, when there's enough precedent that something is not being done honestly or competently here, and you get enough of that, I think that makes a good foundation for why things probably weren't done the way they should later on. Here's what I mean by that. First of all, when Zeek Rewards first launched, like I said, back in January of 2011, they, on a corporate level, were promoting a guaranteed 125% return. And distributors were even calling it a return on investment, their affiliates, you know, an ROI. On a corporate level, they were using terms like reinvesting the money that you would earn from the pool into more, you know, buying more bids and rolling it over, compounding, letting those amounts compound. And then they hired this legal team. They hired Jerry Nera and his partner Richard Walk, two of the best attorneys out there. Then they hired Kevin Grimes a little after that to focus on the compliance part of it. They hired Dr. Keith Lagos, who's the publisher of Network Marketing Business Journal, as a consultant, helping with their redesigning their comp plan and so forth. They brought in Greg Caldwell as their COO. Greg he's the owner and president of a company called White Hat Solutions, which is a corporate investigating and security consulting company. They brought in Peter Mingles, who is the founder and CEO of PM Marketing, which is a premier lead generation and training company serving the network marketing industry. He's also at the time was the president of the ANMP, Association of Network Marketing Professionals. Dr. Clifton Jolly, which has been he's a veteran PR guy for the MLM industry. A lot of these types of people, this really kind of all-star team of people. And I want to revisit them and how their credibility was exploited, not them personally, but how other people did it. I'll get to that in a minute. But the point is, this is the kind of people they brought in. And they said, you know what, stop making these investment kind of terms. Stop using words like compounding or investment, or stop using terms like a return or things like that. Well, here's the challenge with that. When your company was openly doing this and allowing its distributors to do it for several months, and then all of a sudden, almost overnight, you start telling people you're going to be terminated if you use any of these terms, it's kind of tough to get distributors to stop doing that right away. And for several months after that, distributors were still doing it, well, because they were essentially trained to do it in the beginning. That's how completely wrong this was in the way it was originally constructed. In fact, when I did my review right before the shutdown, I found places on Zeek Reward websites, like in their own policies and procedures, where they're talking about compounding bids, and an active website off the ZeekRewards.com site called a compounder report. I mean, even they couldn't find all the evidence of their own use of this terminology. to strip it all out. I think I made the analogy in the exposé that I did that, you know, kind of stripping out all this terminology from all of their marketing material was kind of like trying to take the fudge out of a Rose Bowl size bucket of fudge swirl ice cream. You're just never going to get it all. And they didn't. I mean, to the very end, there was all kinds of investment type of nomenclature being used out there. But here's the, I'll get to the investment part of this later. I don't want to go off on a tangent on that. But I'll explain why they very likely were an unregistered security and what the problem with that is when I get to that. But the point is, that's the kind of the way the whole thing was set up. Previous to this, Paul Burks ran something called the Free Store Club. Because, by the way, Rex Venture Group is a 14-year-old company. I've heard a lot of people refer to Zeek Rewards is a 14-year-old company. It wasn't. It was essentially a startup. Rex Venture Group had been around for 14 years. They'd run a lot of these other little deals from time to time. And there was this one thing that he was running called a Free Store Club where you could pay like $10 to $50 a month for membership to get these discounts on these products. And you can buy in for like $1,300. You got some cookware and some sample memberships or something. Anyway, to me, it looked like it was something that probably would not have passed legal scrutiny, had it come under such legal scrutiny. So there was a predecessor there that already had more red flags sticking out of it than the Russian consulate. I think that's the analogy I used in my expose. So again, now he's doing this, and Zeek Rewards, which again had a lot of red flags sticking out of it, that certainly a lot more people should have recognized and should have recognized were still there. And specifically in Zeek Rewards, one of the things that they offered was it was a 2x5 matrix. That was the MLM part of it. And it paid on these monthly subscriptions, which was $10 for the silver, $50 for the gold, and $99 for the diamond every month. And these subscriptions gave you a bunch of business-related materials and services. But they didn't include bids. Okay? Now, keep that in mind. That's going to really be an important point here coming up. But that's one of the income streams. There were several. I'm going to focus on just that one and what was called the retail points pool, which they eventually changed to retail profit pool. Well, I think it was retail profit pool to start with, and they changed it to retail points pool. But and then that was where, you know, 50% of all of the profits, and by the way, it was profits. People out there have been saying it's revenue, total income. It can't possibly be, because if you pay 50% of the revenue, what if you didn't make any profit? You have to pay a percentage of profits. So it was 50% of the profits, which can easily be determined on a daily basis, unlike what some other people have said. At the end of the day, you just look at your expenses, your income, find out what your profit was. Okay, we had this much profit. We're going to put 50% of it into a pool. We're going to divide it, and everyone's going to get 1.5% or whatever the percentage. It was a fluctuating percentage. So if you bought 1,000 bids and you gave them away, because that would convert them to points in the profit pool. Now, I need to explain this so you'll understand later on why it was illegal. So you bought 1,000 bids. To get 1,000 points in the pool, which the 1.5% is based on, is paid on how many points you had in the pool, to convert those bids you bought to points, you had to give them away. So if I gave 1,000 bids away, you can give up to 1,000 bids to any one person. You can buy as many as $10,000 worth of bids. And a lot of people did buy in for $10,000 worth of bids. So I can find 10 people to give 1,000 free bids to. They can go to Zeekler and start playing around with the bids. And I've converted them all now to points. I've got 10,000 points in my pool. If on that day the pool paid 1.5%, I would then have $150 added to my pool. And if I wanted to buy bids with that $150 and roll it over, in other words, reinvest it, I would start off the next day with 10,150 points, assuming, of course, I gave those bids away. Or I could just take out the $150. But people were encouraged to reinvest the bids, to use whatever you got from the pool and buy more bids with it, so that point amount in your pool would compound and keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, so you'd get paid on a bigger and bigger percentage. But you had to keep giving away those bids to convert them to points. You couldn't just buy the bids. So that's how that part worked. Now, those are the only two parts I'm going to focus on, because those are the only parts relevant to the legality of it. And again, the matrix paid anywhere from 25 cents to up to $3.50 for every one of these silver, gold, or diamond subscribers you signed up for $10, $50, or $99 a month. So that was the matrix part of it. So those are the two major income sources. So now that I've kind of laid that groundwork, and this goes into a lot more detail again in the review if you want to read that, the 35 pages. But here's all of the red flags that were leading up to this. First of all, they had musical credit card processors. Now, I understand they had a lot of credit card fraud in the beginning, and that was true. So they had to get other credit card processors. But it is interesting that all of their credit card processors, after the first couple dumped them because of the credit card fraud, was out of Seoul, South Korea, out of Panama, out of Costa Rica, out of Cyprus, out of Hong Kong. None of them were United States credit card processors. So, you know, I have a concern with a lot of stuff being offshore like that. And why did they have to be? Wasn't there a single credit card merchant service provider or a single credit card gateway in the United States? Not one? That should have been a red flag. That should have at least been a question. Why? Of all these analysts out there that were looking at them at the time, why not? Why not even one from the United States? So what was the problem they had with you? Then they had what I call the double bank boot in my review. They had two banks. Now, one was, in fact, a very small local bank. It was called New Bridge Bank. But they had another bank called BB&T. Now, I've heard other commentators talk about this at the time, saying, oh, well, this New Bridge Bank was way too small for them. They couldn't handle their business, completely forgetting to mention about the much bigger BB&T bank that they also had, which was certainly big enough to handle them. Now, even BB&T was relatively small compared to like Chase or Bank of America or Wells Fargo or, you know, banks like that. But I remember Zeke said at the time, the way that they spun it was like this. Zeke is currently in the process of moving to a bank that can handle our growing needs. And while in transition, we'll be closing our old accounts. Notice how they're kind of making it sound like it's their choice. It's their decision. These banks are too small. They can't really handle our growth. We've got to move to a bigger bank. When in reality, every bit of circumstantial evidence suggests that it was the banks that asked them to leave. Okay, for example, they said that the banks couldn't handle their growing international needs, but BB&T had a major international presence. They absolutely could handle that. They said that the bank accounts were being closed down, and any outstanding commission checks, you had to cash within 4 days. I think it was the noon the following Monday or something like that. Just 4 days from the announcement. Get your checks cashed, because those accounts are being closed down. Now, if it was their decision to leave, and it was all their choice, why not just leave that account open and leave enough funds in there to handle all the outstanding commission checks? You know, so it's not only that, they actually had no banking service at all for several days during the transition. Why not let the accounts overlap for a few days so you can have a smooth, seamless handoff? I mean, there's no question that the banks were the ones who instigated their departure and apparently asked them to leave very quickly and left them essentially without any banking services for a period of time. Now we hear that we have a number of other banks, according to the SEC, they were holding funds in 15 different accounts, some of them, you know, e-wallet accounts and things like that. But again, what about the U.S. banks? Now, we've been told by other commentators that there were U.S. banks that they moved to that were much larger and bigger. But again, in the U.S., that would be Wells Fargo, Chase, Bank of America, somebody like that. But yet, it's not any of those banks. So who is this much bigger, better bank that they moved to? We never found out. No one ever knew. Other than the suggestion that it was overseas, but again, we have no idea who they were. But the point is, when the company spins it like, well, it's our decision to move, when in fact they're being kicked out, I think that there's a credibility issue there. You know, someone should have challenged that. Why are you saying this like it's your choice when clearly it isn't, and you know, why didn't you leave enough funds to cover the checks and all the, you know, the same questions I just asked rhetorically. No one asked those questions. Then there was this the six different international countries that they closed down. Okay, so the same day that people started complaining that our back office is closed down in these markets like Serbia, I think, was one of them. And they said, why? Why are we being shut down? And the six different countries get off the pull-down menu on the application screen. They're suddenly omitted. And eventually Zeke comes out with this announcement saying, well, the government says that it's illegal for us to do business with people in these countries. The Office of Foreign Asset Control, the OFAC, you know, through the U.S. Treasury Department, has this list of countries we're not allowed to do business in. And these were all of these countries. In other words, it's not our fault. It's not our choice. The government says we can't do business in these countries. We're sorry, people. We have to shut you down. We have no choice. So the way it's spun is, we're just trying to be legal. We're just trying to be good guys and really make sure the company stays strong and viable and, you know, we don't come under legal attack. Just one problem with that, though. Those six countries aren't illegal to do business in. Like, at all. There are certain individuals and organizations that you are restricted from doing business with, but not just people in those countries in general. In fact, if anyone would have done any analysis of this at all, The people that are more pro-Zeek that were reporting on this, Serbia, Croatia, Slovenia, Belarus, Egypt, and Macedonia, those were the six countries, they would have found out that Avon and Oriflame are operating in all six of those countries. Herbalife in all but Serbia, Amway was in Croatia and Slovenia, and even Vima was in Serbia, Croatia, and Slovenia, all doing just fine. And they've been in those countries operating for years. I mean, clearly, it was, see, there's a difference between a lie and a mistake. A lie implies you know it's not true when you say it. A mistake means you honestly believe it when you say it, but it happens to not be true. I have a hard time calling this a mistake. With all of the legal power, the legal minds they had at the time that were guiding them, the fact that the OFAC document that Zeek linked to in the announcement about why they were closing these countries, in the very link they linked to, it clearly says nothing about bans in those six countries or any kind of prohibition from doing business in those six countries. But that kind of leads me to believe they kind of believed it but didn't even look at their own evidence. That would be just gross incompetence. So is it, it's either gross incompetence or it's deception. It has to be one or the other because it wasn't even remotely true what they were saying, and it was easily verifiably untrue. But yet they were claiming it was. How did they not know their own statement wasn't true? It's all these rhetorical questions, but still, how is this not challenged? Now, again, critics were challenging it, but there are a lot of leaders in this business. People like, I'm going to revisit this later on, but some of those people I mentioned earlier, not the attorneys, but, I mean, there are a lot of people that were in positions of authority that people looked to for guidance when they did their due diligence that was telling them, yeah, this is fine. And it's perfectly fine. They shut down these six. By the way, the argument that they shut down those six countries because there's a lot of fraud in those countries and they're more vulnerable to fraudulent activity, I get that. If their attorney said, don't do business in these six countries, shut them down because you're more vulnerable to fraudulent activity, I would completely understand that and I would completely agree with the decision. So it's not about the fact they shut down the six countries. That's not my issue. It's either the lie or the gross incompetence, one or the other, involving their explanation for why they did it. That's the problem. So if they were so wrong about that, and was kind of at least misleading about why they shut down their banks, how many other things have they said that we can't really take at face value? Like, for example, Montana. Now, they said, and again, some of their supporters have said, they were never shut down in Montana. That's a myth. It's not true. Yes, they were shut down in Montana. Remember, they launched in January of 2011. They were open in Montana. They were doing business in Montana. Then they hired these legal authorities, and they told them, you're not compliant in Montana. There's lots of hoops you got to go through, which, by the way, were not exceptional at all. Just basically some regulations you had to agree to, but, like return policies and things like that. It was nothing exceptional. You know, it wasn't particularly difficult to get registered in that state, but it is one of the, I believe, six states where you do have to register as an MLM opportunity. You have to get some type of approval. They hadn't done that yet. So that's when they backed out of Montana to say, okay, wait, let's get back in Montana and do this the right way, through the right path. Let's do the formal registration process, which they never succeeded in doing. Montana said, no, you don't comply, you don't get back in. Now, they could eventually made more changes and eventually complied, but they didn't. Now, again, it was probably an internal decision to get back out of Montana, but they actually were open in Montana, then they weren't. Regardless of who was responsible for the shutdown, they were shut down in Montana. When you do business there and you stop doing business there, that's called a shutdown. And the point is, whatever they were doing, it wasn't compliant in that state, and it still wasn't at the time they were shut down. Then there was the North Carolina Credit Union. Now, the North Carolina Credit Union started putting out what I would agree with was completely unprofessional and inappropriate warnings to their clients, telling them to avoid Zeek. It was a fraudulent company. It turned out to be true, but at that time they didn't know that. And so I think that was inappropriate that they were doing that, but nonetheless, they did that, and then they had to backpedal on it, and they were just saying, you know, they had to come out with a little kind of disclaimer about their original claims that one particular person in their office was making. But again, the point behind just that is, what did they see? I mean, that's not very common that somebody in the risk management department of a credit union takes the pretty egregious step to start sending out warnings claiming a particular company is fraudulent. I mean, you got to have a lot of red flags sticking out of you to cause that to happen. Now, again, it was inappropriate the way they did it. I understand that. But the point is, why do you think there might have been something for base, some kind of basis for why they did that? Because now we know there was. So they certainly saw something that I saw, that a lot of critics saw, that apparently not enough people saw, that they should have saw. And then there's the North Carolina Attorney General. Remember, North Carolina is their home state. Now, usually when a attorney general goes after an MLM company, if it's not your home state, that's like they're attacking one of the branches of the tree. When your home state AG goes after you, it's going after the trunk, you know, it's going after the roots. Okay, you can't survive without your home state AG. So this is pretty significant. When what we were told was about the beginning of July, they sent what was called a civil investigative demand, a CID, which means they're starting an investigation. By the way, they also said they had, I think, 8 complaints and 23 inquiries. Zeke's response to that was, that's not unusual, and it wasn't. 8 complaints is actually kind of low, relatively speaking. 23 inquiries certainly is phenomenally low. I would have expected that to have 2 more zeros at the end of it. But the point is, that wasn't particularly unusual. So it was something else besides the number of complaints that caused them to want to start an investigation. What we found out later was the investigation, the CID, was actually issued a month earlier than Zeke announced. It was actually beginning of June. So they had been under investigation for 2 full months before the SEC and the Secret Service was also part of it, came in and shut them down. But the North Carolina Attorney General's office did say, and I'm quoting here, "We do have concerns about Zeke Rewards and related companies and have said so publicly. Our Consumer Protection Division has asked them to provide us with documents so we can examine their business practices," end quote. Now, what would they have found? We don't know, because the SEC ended up shutting them down before this investigation concluded. But understand, even if the SEC hadn't done this, even if this lawsuit against the SEC somehow miraculously is successful, we still have their home state investigation from their AG's office, and we don't even know what the result would be. I mean, that could still close them down if that should come back into play. Then there was the big debacle that they had with Dr. Keith Lagos. Now Keith, just is a friend. I like to consider him one anyway. We've done business for many, many years. I've known him for 21 years I've been involved. He's the publisher of Network Marketing Business Journal. Keith was hired as a consultant to help them with their compensation plan. He was also an affiliate. He promoted it. He said he was making between $40,000 and $45,000 a month. So that's why I separate him from the attorneys. And again, I'm jumping ahead here, but the attorneys were just doing their jobs. Guys that were part of, got hired for compliance, like Greg Caldwell, guys like that, Cliff and Jolly, they were just doing their job. They didn't promote this kind of over and above just what was within their job description. Keith Lagos did. Besides the fact they were Company of the Month twice in Network Marketing Business Journal, which everyone knows is essentially a paid advertisement. Even Keith admits that. But nonetheless, they were there as Company of the Month, and they've had a big ad in almost every issue, but Keith was a promoter of it. He encouraged people to join it. Well, Keith got on a conference call just a couple of weeks before the shutdown, acknowledged at the beginning of the call that he was talking to an audience of Zeke Rewards distributors. He knew that's who he was talking to. And then proceeded to bash Zeke Rewards and tell everybody that probably within the next 1 to 6 months, the FTC was going to shut them down because they're going to shut down all penny auctions. And you need a plan B, so he starts pitching them on Linus, which I'm probably going to do another expose on, except I'm not going to wait until 3 months until it's all done. But anyway, I'll get to the Linus on another day. But yeah, again, a lot of red flags. But the point is, whatever the other company was, he's still a paid consultant for the company, and he's an affiliate, allegedly making $40,000 to $45,000 a month, and gets on one of the calls and starts pitching another direct competitor and telling people this company could be going down by FTC action in the near future. Not really sure what Keith was thinking, and I know he got a kind of a backlash on that. He was certainly, obviously, he was fired as their consultant. Don't know if he was terminated, although there is a very strict policy, at least there was, in Zeke Rewards, forbidding you from promoting another MLM company to Zeke Rewards distributors. He certainly violated that policy. But as far as I know, he wasn't terminated, but kind of academic at this point, because pretty much everybody was terminated about 2-3 weeks later. But the point behind that is, Keith claims that he has some inside sources that are very reliable that are telling him that the FTC is in the process of doing that. And I don't have inside sources, but I believe him. I think that the penny auctions are online gambling. An argument has been made recently by some supporters of penny auctions that there's some skill involved, so it can't be gambling. Well, there's some skill involved in poker. There's some skill involved in blackjack, or arguably even in craps. Games of chance can have some element of skill that doesn't no longer make them games of chance. Obviously, poker and blackjack are still gambling, and I think they're going to consider this to be online gambling. There's already some, I think, some discussions about that. And according to Keith, the FTC is already working on that. It is online gambling, in my opinion. If there is some slight amount of effort and some, well, not effort, but skill, but it is primarily luck. So again, I want to explain how penny auctions work. If you don't understand that, go Google it. But the point is, it's primarily luck. There's very, very little actual skill involved in who wins it. It is essentially online gambling. So every time you hear somebody say, I won a $500 iPad for $45, there are potentially thousands, if not tens of thousands, of other people who all bid one or more dollars on that that lost. For every one big winner you hear about that, there are thousands and thousands of losers. So overall, obviously, you come out behind. You know, yeah, you hear about, you know, somebody just won $15 million in the Megabucks machine here in Vegas a couple of days ago. Yeah, you hear stories like that all the time, but obviously there are a lot more losers than there are winners, okay? Winners didn't build Caesar's Palace. Okay? Winners didn't build the MGM Grand. Those multi-billion dollar properties were built based on losers. That's how many more of them there are than winners. Same with penny auctions. So they're major cash cows. That's why, by the way, I believe they're not a Ponzi scheme in the case of Secret Wars, but I'll get to that in a minute. You know, there's, I don't want to be nitpicky, but there's some, you know, little things. Like, they're trying so hard to get everybody compliant, but yet they had this section on their website called Important Legal Stuff. That's a quote, Important Legal Stuff. But it was at the bottom of their homepage in dark gray text on a black background, where you literally couldn't read it unless you moused over it to change the color of it. If it's so important, why were you trying to hide it and make it so hard to read? They kept talking about how they were trying to be so transparent, but yet what they actually did was exactly the opposite. They disallowed public meetings. You could have private meetings in your home, but you could be terminated if you had a public meeting. In other words, a meeting where you have to be accountable for what you say, where the media or regulators can come in and watch you and see what you say, those were prohibited. No public meetings. If it's not a corporate-sponsored event, then there are absolutely no public meetings allowed. That's a quote from the policies and procedures. So it means, like, again, you know, what were they afraid of? Again, distributors making the wrong claims. Well, whether they make them privately or publicly, they were still making them. But they went on in their prohibition to say, we cannot ensure compliance, and so therefore we strictly prohibit, all capital letters, them. We're talking about, again, the public meetings. Any affiliate reported as having public meetings will be permanently removed from the program. So how is the content of the presentation relevant to the venue? Okay, you can make violative claims just as easily in your living room as you can in the front of a meeting room at a Holiday Inn. I mean, it would seem the only difference is that public meetings can be monitored more easily by the media, law enforcement, and the company, thus demands more prudence and accountability. And such an unusual policy can create the perception, at least to the media and law enforcement, that you have something to hide. Okay, I want to make just two more points, and then I'll get into specifically the Ponzi pyramid and investment scheme discussion. One's dealing with their 5CC program, their lead program that they offered. And again, this really goes to ethics and competency. And then I want to make a quick comment about the tax issue. That's also going to be a huge problem that's still yet to come. That's a fiasco that's waiting for a few months from now. So the 5CC program, this was a program that they offered where you could actually get leads, get people that wanted free bids. So if you wanted to take those bids you bought and give them away so you can convert them to points in your pool so you can start earning those pool bonuses, you didn't even have to go through the effort of finding your own people to give the free bids to. You can go to their 5CC program and you could essentially buy people. They put out ads and just said, look, you want some free bids in a penny auction, put in your name, address, and your email address here, and they would give all those people away and say, here's people you can give 1,000 free bids to, or it was at one time 500, I think. So again, they were giving leads or potential customers to their distributors. They were supplying them. What they said, right after they hired this legal team, this dream team of compliance people, Zeke Rewards' claim was, I'm quoting, we will no longer be charging 5CC subscribers for 5CC customers. The reason for that is that federal law has changed, and we have been informed that we are no longer legally allowed to provide customers or leads for purchase. End quote. So their explanation is, the laws have just changed. It's now illegal for us to provide you leads or customers. That's why we're going to stop doing it. And they were referring to, by the way, the new business opportunity rule that had just been finalized. Again, the problem with this is not so much that they stopped selling the leads. If they were advised to do that by attorney, and I understand that they were by their attorneys, I completely understand that. You'll understand why in a minute. I have no problem with the fact they actually discontinued this program. What I have a problem with is why they lied about it. And I want to use the word mistake so badly here, but this is so not even remotely close to the truth. Their explanation is not, it is so far away from accurate. And with the legal talent that they had to advise them on this, I cannot believe that they honestly believed what they were saying here. There's overwhelming evidence that would have shown that there was no illegality to what they were doing at all. First of all, the letter written by Richard Walk, one of their attorneys, the best MLM attorneys out there, by the way, that they linked to describe why they were doing this, again, said absolutely nothing about it being illegal. I spoke to Richard Walk about this, and obviously he was very limited as to why he could tell me about Zeke, because they're a client. There's an attorney-client privilege there. But I asked him just generically, would you ever tell anyone that the new business opportunity rule made it illegal to sell leads? And he would say, no, I would never say that. And I said, did you ever say that to Zeke Rewards? And his response was, my letter speaks for itself. And it does. He never said that. So the new business opportunity rule said, first of all 113 pages of it, which I've read more than once, MLM companies are exempt. They weren't in the beginning, and we had a big firestorm about that a few years ago. Ultimately, they exempted all MLM companies. They define 29 times in this document how they don't apply MLM companies to this new business opportunity rule. They cite specific examples of where people have said, well, MLM companies could still fall under this part, or maybe this could still apply to them, and the FTC comes back and says, right, but here's why it doesn't. And again, we don't mean MLM companies, right? We're not counting them now. They're not part of this. But there is one part of it that says, if you're a seller-assisted business opportunity, this rule could apply to you. And one of the criteria to be seller-assisted is providing leads or customers to your distributors. If you are a seller-assisted business opportunity, which again, if someone were to bring Zeke Rewards to them, they probably would have come back and said, yeah, maybe they do meet that criteria, but for the 30th time, we're not talking about MLM companies. But again, if there's one in a million chance that this new business opportunity rule could apply to them, and if you just drop the program, it's zero in a million, that's infinitely better. So I would say, just drop it, which their attorneys advise them to do. And again, that's great, perfectly good advice. But why tell people it's because this made it illegal for you to do it? The repercussions, even if the new business opportunity rule had applied, was that they would have to provide more disclosure. That's it. If the new business opportunity rule applied to your business opportunity, you had to provide a disclosure form. Now, so think about this. Which do you think would resonate better with your distributors and your prospects? We have to take this 5CC program out because it provides a very remote chance that we may have to provide more disclosure, kind of commensurate with what franchises offer. Or, well, our attorneys have just told us it's illegal now for us to offer this to you, so we have to take it out. We have no choice because we want to stay legal. The second one sounds a whole lot better, doesn't it? Of course, that's completely untrue. And the first one would beg the question, well, why are you guys so afraid of disclosure? But still, they just weren't truthful. Or, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, they were grossly incompetent in what they believe their reason was for taking the 5CC program out. So again, when they keep doing this over and over and over, how can you really trust any information coming out of this company at this point? So again, there's a lot more to that, by the way, but you can read it in the 35-page expose. The tax issue. There's a lot of questions that have come up because this is an unprecedented deal here. Now, based on a February 20th training call that they did, which I've listened to three times now, even their resident tax expert, Howard Kaplan, and by the way, Howard's, I understand he's a very good tax expert. He was just doing his job. This is not one of those people that was openly promoting this over and above what he was paid to do. So I don't want to throw him under the bus here. This is not his responsibility. He was doing the best that he could do with what he had to work with. But the point is, even he wasn't apparently sure about whether or not points are income. So if you buy $10,000 worth of bids, you give them all away, you got 10,000 points in your account now. Are those points income? Do you count them on your 1099? Well, Zeke did count them on people's 1099s, and they said, well, wait a minute. How come I only took out $1,000 this year, but you got $50,000 on my 1099? Wait till next year's 1099s, and the IRS is going to have a field day with this. Because the question, of course, is, well, every 90 days, the points are dropped, first in, first out. They don't accumulate forever. So when they drop out, can you write them off on your taxes? You know, so questions like this came up. Now, Mr. Kaplan said in the beginning, yes, these have value. When these points are worth something, when you gain them, you add them to your income. When they drop out, you expend them or whatever, you can write them off. Then there one of their, I think it was the COO at the time, Chief Operating Officer, Don Wright Olivares, and she was a major kind of a spokesperson for the company. She was on a lot of their calls and so forth. She was conducting this training call, and she comes back and basically explains why Mr. Kaplan is wrong, and they're not income. And then Mr. Kaplan comes back and says, okay, so I get it now, so you're right. So the points aren't income. They're not taxable. You can't write them off if they expire, blah, blah, blah. And then a transcript of this entire conversation appeared on the ZekeRewardsHelp.com website. That was a corporate-sponsored information website. And the transcript of the conversation had the question, you know, are they deductible once they expire, the points? And the answer was yes. So we had a yes, a no, and then a yes again. And we still don't know. And here's the thing. The answer to the question should have been, by most Mr. Kaplan and, is that right, Olivares, what they both should have said was, we don't know. We have no clue how to account for this. It's never been done before. Nowhere in history has an MLM company ever sold bids, then converted them to points and paid a percentage of points and paid you income from it. So we don't know how the IRS is going to see this. And maybe that should have been a question that was asked way back in the very beginning of the IRS. That's kind of how I would have done it. Instead of just guessing about it or waiting to see how many audits come up and how what and based on the audit outcomes, how they're going to view it. Because understand, again, they were told on this call by the end that no, the points aren't income. So no one's going to count that now as their income, but it's going to be added to their 1099s. It's going to be a mess. It'll be an absolute tax nightmare come next tax season. So this isn't even over yet for those poor people. You know, so what are the points? Are they not? We still don't know. No one still has a clue. Now, in my opinion, and I'm not an expert on this, but I do have a brain, and I think I'm pretty good at just logically and reasonably seeing things based on common sense. 1% of anything gives you 1% of that thing. 1% of an apple is 1% of an apple. 1% of a chicken results in 1% of a chicken. And if that day they paid out 1% of the points in your pool, it did not result in 1% of points. You didn't get points. It resulted in 1% of dollars. So if you get a percentage of the thing that you took the percentage of, those points had value. 1% of them created 1% in dollars. They're absolutely going to be taxable. Okay, now before I get into why Zeke Rewards was definitely a pyramid scheme, but is probably not a Ponzi, I got to at least explain the basic difference between the two, because I know they're used interchangeably a lot, and I've seen it already now in case of Zeke used interchangeably. They're very, very, very different things. A Ponzi scheme is one where more money is paid out than comes in from each initial payment. In other words, if an MLM company paid 10% down 11 levels, so for every $100 of product coming in, they're going to pay out $110 on that $100. Obviously, MLM distributors make a lot more money than what they pay for products. That's what I'm talking about. 100 comes in. For that $100 coming in, $110 is going to go out. Probably the best example would be Carlo Ponzi, you know, the scheme that he ran back in the 1920s. That's where the term Ponzi scheme came from. Okay, he promised a 50% return on investment within 45 days. So if Paul gave him $1,000, he needed to come up with another $500 to cover his promised $1,500 return, right? He paid $1,000. The guy's expecting to get a 50% return, so he's expecting to get $1,500 back. Now, how he did that was by finding Peter, who invested another $1,000, and he used half of his investment to pay off Paul. So that's where the term robbing Peter to pay Paul came from. So he takes $500 from Peter's $1,000 investment, adds it to Paul's original $1,000, and pays Paul back $1,500. But now, the second investor, well, he's expecting $1,500. Ponzi only has $500 left in his pocket, so Ponzi has 45 days to find another $1,000 investor, which he then takes the entire $1,000, takes the $500 out of his pocket, and pays the second guy, pays Peter his $1,500. Now, by the time he's got two people that within 45 days got their 50% return, it's easy to find a whole lot more people because, of course, Peter and Paul are out there telling everybody, this really works, I got my money just like he said, and thousands of people come in, and the Ponzi scheme is off and away. It's exactly what Bernie Madoff did. Now, in a pyramid scheme, you might take in only $1,000, but the guy running the pyramid scheme is probably going to take, say, $10 out of his own pocket, take the other $90, and pay it out to recipients in the scheme, but still he doesn't pay out more than he took in. He took in $1,000, pocketed $10, he pays out $900. You know, like the airplane game. It's a classic 2x3 matrix. People just paid $1,500 to join. The guy running the scheme stuck a little bit of it in his pocket and used the rest to pay it out, but he never paid out more than he took in. So here's the defining question. If all income stopped today, not another penny came into this scheme, could they pay off all previous investors, whatever's owed to them at that time? Like in any MLM company out there today, if not another penny came in the end of that commission run, anyone who's owed their commissions up to that point on products that were purchased to the end of that week could be easily paid off because they typically only pay out 40 to 50% of every dollar that comes in. So the money's there to pay them off. But if all income stopped today, no future investors came in, you wouldn't have enough money to pay off all of the investors in a Ponzi scheme. So that's the mathematical difference. Now, why do I believe Zeke Rewards is not a Ponzi? First of all, I'm not nearly as sure about that as I was back when I wrote the report, because my definitive answer at the time was no. Remember, I wrote that actually before the SEC took their action and called them a Ponzi. I believe the SEC is wrong in how they define them as a Ponzi scheme. For example, they say, well, in June, $162 million came in and they paid out $160 million. The average distributor was reinvesting about 80% of the bids that they were buying. They got their points and they got 1.5% of it, let's say. About 80% of it, they would reinvest in more bids to keep that amount growing, that point pool growing. So the SEC's argument is if that would have went up just a tick, they would have started paying out more than they took in. Okay, that's fundamentally wrong. In fact, it's surprisingly wrong for an organization with the kind of investigative prowess that they should have, the amount of time they had to investigate them. Paul Burks had two dials, essentially, on his dashboard that could affect that payout. The 1.5%, which I do believe the SEC's case that was just an arbitrary number he probably made up, but still, it's a number he had control of. He can dial it down to 1.2, up to 1.8, whatever. It was also a percentage of the profits. He always said up to 50% of profits, and it was profits, not revenue. I've got a recording of Paul Burks talking to people where it comes right out of his mouth, it's profits, not revenue. So up to 50% of profits. So he could just say, okay, we're going to take the 1.5, dial it down to 1.2, and it was 50% of profits. Well, now this week it's going to be 40% of profits. We'll just dial those two dials down. So the SEC's argument was, well, if everybody suddenly, say there was a run on the bank, so to speak, but let's just say there was, hypothetically. Everybody ran in and said, that's it. I don't want to reinvest anything else. I want to pull all my money out as I earn it. If they did that, they wouldn't be using it to buy bids. If they don't buy bids with it, and according to the SEC's numbers, and they've got access to the books now, 98% of the Zeke Rewards revenue was for bids that were never used to bid with. Okay, so if all of a sudden all of those bids that were purchased just to participate in the scheme, essentially, I'm jumping to the pyramid part of it, but if none of that was reinvested into bids, well, then it's 1.5%, let's say, a floating number, but we'll use that number, of up to 50% of profits. There'd be no profits. If they stopped buying all those bids in massive numbers, then it would be 1.5% of practically nothing, and he would have paid out practically nothing. He wasn't obligated to keep paying out these large numbers. It was based on a percentage of profits. If the profits end, so does, at least temporarily, the bonus pool commissions. there's enough money coming from the Zeek or penny auction site when they pile that over into the Zeek reward site to afford very large payouts. I think the analogy I used in the review was if Apple Computer suddenly came out with an MLM division selling a nutritional mineral supplement based on silicon, and they took 50% of all of Apple's profits and dumped that over into their MLM division, their MLM division would probably pay out more than 100% of what it took in. So again, when you take all this profit from Zeekler, and penny auctions can be very profitable, and pile that over onto Zeek Rewards, that is a perfectly valid explanation for why it was paying out more than Zeek Rewards was taking in, because they were getting a lot of commissions from another entity. Now, what's kind of changing my mind a little bit is this recording, this video recording of Paul Burks in his office talking to about seven people that apparently was based on some references that were made there were just a few weeks before, or I should say a few weeks after they hired their legal team. Paul Burks says himself that the balance of the pool can't keep compounding and going up forever. And at some point, it would get too large for them to pay everybody out on, and that would be a Ponzi scheme, so we've got to eventually find a way to cap that. So he's essentially admitting it's a Ponzi scheme when he says that. Now, I believe he's wrong about his own company. I don't think he completely understands, and he even admits in this thing that there's other people that handle the comp plan and the day-to-day business and all that kind of stuff. I think he might even generally be ignorant about how his own company worked. Because, again, if that amount in the pool just got too big, he would just dial down the percentage or dial down what the basis of the percentage is, you know, the percent of profits. It doesn't have to overpay. So I'm still, although not quite as confident as this as I was before, but I'm still calling it not a Ponzi scheme. But it very definitely is a pyramid and probably is an unregistered security. I'm going to save the pyramid for last. Let's jump up to the unregistered security angle. Okay, to understand this, again, I got to get into a little bit of SEC law here. There's something called the Howey test. This is the defining criteria the SEC uses to figure out what an investment is. If it's a security, okay, if it's an investment, you have to register as a security and have to be licensed to sell a security, like a mutual fund or a stock in a company, things like that. You can't sell them without a license, and you have to register as a investment, as a security. And there's very harsh penalties if you don't do that. So is that what Zeek Rewards is? Well, the definition is, based on this Howey test, an investment of consideration into a common enterprise where the income is derived from the efforts of others. It used to say solely from the efforts, but recent legal actions now left out the word solely, so it just has to be primarily from the efforts of others. Investment of consideration, that's anything of value, chickens, gold dust, whatever, usually it means money. So an investment of money into a common enterprise, a whole bunch of other people are investing money into the same thing. So far, pretty much all MLM companies are 2 out of 3, arguably, but you can make a case where they are. They're at least those two. Where we're not a security is number 3. The income is derived from the efforts of others. We work our butts off to build a big downline and to maintain it. It eventually becomes residual, but in the same way that we worked our butt off to write a song or write a book, that took a lot of effort to create that the residual comes in from. So MLM companies are absolutely not securities. But if the income starts to become based on other people's efforts from the beginning, it can still be a security. A perfect example is a company here in Vegas a few years ago called Winning Edge. And it was a deal where they said, pay us $50 and we'll build your downline for you. Okay? With the old downline building schemes. We'll do all the advertisement, we'll do the closing, whatever. You just pay us the money, we'll build your downline for you. The SEC said that was an unregistered security because it was investment of consideration into a common enterprise and your income was derived from the efforts of others. They did all the work. You just paid the $50 a month and sat back and said, so how much money do you make me? So you've got to put in some effort, but here's the key. It has to be effort. And by the way, I got this straight from regulatory legal authorities here, including the AG of Montana, by the way, for his office. The effort has to be towards the actual creation of the income. It can't be just some peripheral effort as a prerequisite to participate in the income. Here's what I mean. Let's say I have my own portfolio of stocks and bonds I invest in, and I get about a 20% return a year. You're my neighbor. You and my other neighbors find out, well, Len's pretty good at his investing. He's getting about a 20% return a year. You all come to me and say, Len, could you handle our portfolio? Could you invest money for us so we can get as good a return? And I'm thinking, like, you know, that Howey test thing says, these guys got to put in some effort towards this, otherwise I could be declared an unregistered security. So you guys, listen, I'll do that for you. I'll take your money and I'll invest it for you, and I'll decide what companies I'm going to invest in, when I'm going to pull out of, who I'm going to short, who I'm going to go along with, how much I'm going to invest, when to shift it from stocks to bonds and vice versa, and what percentages. I'll do all of that for you if you all paint my garage. There's, now you're putting in some effort. Here's why that wouldn't work. That's essentially your effort to participate. That's your payment. Remember, payment of consideration can be anything of value, including effort. So it's like in a mutual fund, you pay a load. You pay a fee for them to handle your money and make you a return. That's just your fee to participate, painting my garage. So originally, the very beginning, when Zeke Reward said, okay, you guys all have to place this little classified ad every day. It takes about 5 minutes a day. That was the pitch. That's the effort. So it's not a registered security, even though they were back then saying 125% return guaranteed. But you got to place this ad. So the attorneys come in. They're good attorneys. They said, look, you can't do that. Stop using all of these terms. And again, just because you stop using the terms, that changes the packaging, the wrapping paper. But the content didn't change. All they did was, well, the first thing they did was they said, well, these services, they were really not part of Zeke, they're peripheral, but they said these services where you can hire people to place your ads for you, kind of make it completely automated, you got to drop those, you got to disallow those. So they at least put in the effort of actually placing the ad. But besides that, which is a minor issue, now you have to also buy these bids, and you can't just buy them, you have to give them away. You have to give them away as samples in the process of trying to generate new customers. So there's more effort now applied to the process. Now, the ads themselves, of course, has absolutely nothing to do. There's no way that would be considered effort. And by the way, I asked this specifically of the securities department. And they even took the question, said, we're going to have an attorney look at this. We're going to get back to you. So they had some time to really think about this. And an attorney from the securities department there in Montana said that, no, the placement of these ads nor the giving away of the bids would count as effort towards the Howey test. Because again, it wasn't part of the effort to create the return. It was effort you were doing just to participate in the return, but somebody else was still deciding how to actually, all the steps that Zeke takes, A, B, and C, whatever it is, to actually create that 1.5% return on up to 50% of profit, that was all done internally, and you had no control of that. Your effort was just your entry fee, so to speak, to participate in that. But it didn't actually create the return. So none of that would have still been effort. And the ad, again, had nothing to do with the return, because whether those ads had a million responses or zero responses, you still got paid the same thing. And eventually there were literally millions of these little free classified ads going out there. So they were doing nothing. It was just a little nuisance thing that you had to do, supposedly to create some effort. That was an effort. So what was the effort? What effort did Zeke Rewards distributors apply towards the actual creation of the return? Nothing. Giving away the bids is not effort towards the creation of the return. If you gave away your bids and got zero customers, you gave away your bid and got 10 customers, had no bearing on the percentage return that you got. It was still completely decided by all the effort internally. Basically, it was decided by how much money Ziegler made and how much Paul Burks decided what percentage of that to pay out. So again, there was no effort in, as the Howey test sees effort, anywhere in this process. Now, as I understand it, they were working on some things to eventually add them. They didn't get there in time. But at the time they were shut down, in my opinion, based on everything that I've seen here, there is absolutely nothing that would have been deemed effort as applying that test. It was an investment of consideration into a common enterprise where the income was derived by the efforts of others from the very first minute. And whatever effort you applied was just your entry fee to participate. So I still think, in my opinion, it actually was an unregistered security. Because internally, nothing changed. They changed the terms they used. They forbid investment-like terminology, but it didn't change the core of what they were actually doing. Now, is Zeke Rewards a pyramid scheme? Should probably use past tense at this point. It has been suggested by more than one pro-MLM authority out there, and I'm not naming names here because, again, I don't want anyone to think I'm talking about any one person, because this applies to more than one authority that should have known better, that was telling people things like this: if you were to remove the profit pool, there's no way they would have come under any kind of legal scrutiny. That was the only problem with the program. That is completely and egregiously wrong. Let's completely take that away and only look at the 2x5 matrix, where you earned a percentage of the bronze, the silver, and the gold subscriptions. Remember, this is $10, $50, or $99 a month. Let's just jump to the diamond subscription. You got 200 bonus points actually added to your pool. It had the highest earning potential. That's what you got. You got the diamond bonus pool. You qualified for that. You got a store customization, because you got an online store too. You got to participate in the daily profit share. You got a 3 turnkey businesses, free training. There is nothing in these packages. Obviously, the silver and gold, you got less than that. There is nothing in here, not a single component, that would have had value to a non-participant in the income opportunity. Here I got to give you a little more legal background. Whether or not you have a product does not determine whether or not you're a pyramid scheme or not. Okay? The FTC and several states have rung in on this, and they're very clear about it. In fact, in the FTC, I don't want to get into too much detail about this, and I know I over-explain things sometimes, but I got to back up a little bit, give a little more foundation. A few years ago, there were some lawsuits against companies like Jewelway, Five Star Auto Club, things like that. They had temporary restraining orders against them. They were closed down temporarily, and the judge said, okay, here's all these changes you have to make. If you agree to make these changes, we'll lift the TRO and you're back in business. Agreed to those changes, they were allowed back in business under the condition that 50% of all of their product would be sold to non-distributors, at least 50%. So they couldn't count more than half of the personal consumption by their own distributors. Obviously, that would be very difficult for any company to operate under those conditions, because most distributors love their own products and they do a lot of personal consumption. Well, we were a little concerned about that. The SEC said, wait a minute, is that the line in the sand where the FTC has finally declared it? Because the 70% rule wasn't it, by the way. That's always been misinterpreted by the anti-MLM critics. 70% rule is an old Amway safeguard. It's not even a law. That says 70% of all your previously purchased product must be sold or consumed, or you got to use it in some way before you can buy any more product. It's just to avoid stockpiling of product in your garage. It has nothing to do with what percentage has to be sold to non-distributors. So, but now is there one? Is it a 50% rule? So they wrote a letter to the FTC, and they said, give us some guidance on this. And the FTC wrote back, January of 2004. This letter is on my MarketWave website. Go to the research links. And they said, very clearly, we don't care what percentage is personally consumed by distributors. That's not the criteria. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but they were very clear on this. They said, we go by motive. Are you buying the product because you actually want it and you would have purchased it anyway, even if there were no income opportunity? Or are you buying it just as a token act to meet a quota to participate in the compensation plan? And if there were no compensation plan, you would not have bought these products. So there's a lot of great products out there where we would say, hey, I'd buy those products even if there were no income opportunity. I buy products from 3 different MLM companies right now that I have no interest in their income opportunity, but I love their products. In fact, right before I started recording this, I ate a big chunk of jerky from Jerky Direct, but I'm never going to build a downline in it, but I love their product. You know, or are you buying the product because you have to buy X amount of product to achieve this rank in the comp plan and get paid? So you could actually have someone buy $1,000 worth of product up front, but if it's to start a store, to have inventory, to actually sell, perfectly fine. You could buy $200 worth of product up front, but if it's product you otherwise would never have purchased, you don't really want, and you just did it because you have to qualify in the plan, that could be considered an illegal pyramid if too many people do it. Equinox, a big pyramid scheme, was shut down here in Vegas by the FTC and 15 state AGs. They had great products, a wide variety of very good quality products, but you bought in for $20,000 worth up front as a front load to qualify for the higher ranks in the plan. That's how most people did it, so they were still a pyramid scheme. So again, it's the motive for buying the product. Here, what is the motive for buying the gold, silver, and diamond packages, paying that $10, $50, or $99 a month that is then commissioned in the matrix? Can you think of any way to rationalize how a single distributor, a single person in the history of Zeek Rewards, even if they were to have lasted another 100 years, would ever have bought one of these items on a monthly basis, who had no interest in the income opportunity, just for the intrinsic value of the product alone? That's absurd. obviously 100% now and forever of the people buying these packages were people participating in an income opportunity, and only for that reason. There wasn't a single component of these packages that have value to anyone other than a distributor in the income opportunity. This one aspect alone clearly and undeniably would fall under the criteria of an illegal pyramid scheme based on all the legal precedences that we've ever seen out there. It has nothing to do with the profit pool. Now, the profit pool makes this look inconsequential compared to how much that makes them a pyramid scheme. The profit pool was one where, again, are you buying the bids because you actually want them to bid with, and you would have bought them to bid with even if there were no income opportunity? This is already starting to sound absurd, right? Anybody who understands Zeke? Or are you buying the bids because you have to, so you have something to give away to convert to points so you can make money in the profit pool? What was the motive for buying the products, for buying the bids? Now, a lot of you that know Zeke are probably laughing out loud right now, right? Because it's just so obvious. In fact, we know now 98% of the bids purchased by Zeke Rewards distributors, not Zeekler customers, Zeke Rewards distributors were never used for bidding. In fact, although I have not confirmed this, and I'm still trying to because it's so just out there, it's unbelievable, but I've got from more than one source, one of which is Dawn Wright Oliveras herself, in a recorded interview with Troy Dooley at the A&MP event last March, where she specifically says Zeke Rewards distributors are not allowed to use the bids they purchase to bid with on Zeekler.com. They are not even allowed to use the product for its intended purpose. You must only give them away. Now again, she says that very clearly, and I still find that hard to believe. But anyway, nonetheless, even if there was an option to actually use them to bid, they didn't. 98% were actually just given away. I assume the rest were just kept. But they were given away to generate. Now even if we count them, which we shouldn't, because again, they were bought to participate only in the income opportunity. Obviously, they weren't buying them because they wanted to participate in the auctions on Zeekler, because they never used them for that. They used them to convert to points in the income opportunity. But let's go a step further. Even if we count it, then what they become are sales aids. If you're using them as sample bids to give away to generate more customers, they're a sales aid. Okay? Technically, in your company, if you have a bottle of juice, that's a product. If you have a little tiny sample of it, you know, a little squeeze pack or something, and it's used as a sample that you give away to attract customers, one can make a case that that's a sales aid. That shouldn't be commissionable. Sales aids, training, distributor kits, your back office, your product promotional websites, all these things only a distributor would buy to run their business with. That should not be commissionable because, again, the motive for buying it is only to participate in the income opportunity. So if the bids are only being used as samples to attract more customers, that's a sales aid, again, making it non-commissionable. On multiple levels, slight pun intended, this is a pyramid scheme on just that one aspect, and that's not even counting now. You've also got that 2x5 matrix based on the silver, gold, and diamond business packages. I mean, this thing was a pyramid scheme in so many different ways. It's unbelievable that no one else saw this, except for a few critics and myself, who made the mistake of not reporting on it sooner, but I did talk to about, I think I remembered about 12 different people privately I warned against joining Zeke. At least I said, at least wait until you see how they clear the whole thing up. But don't join it now. And here's why, and I listed all the reasons. There's about six of them I know what they eventually did. I know what their decision was. All six of them eventually joined it. Not a single person that I know of took my advice, and every single one of them joined it, and I assume brought other people in that trusted them to join it as well. And I told them, I said, I'm not sure if it's a Ponzi. I don't think it is. It may be an unregistered security, but for sure it's a pyramid, and here's why. And again, everything I just described applied when they first launched. It applied when they hired their dream team of attorneys, and it applied at the very same day the SEC came in and closed them down. None of this ever changed. It's always been there. So it has always been, in my opinion, an illegal, and apparently the opinion of the SEC as well, an illegal pyramid scheme. And if there's any doubt left here, I'm going to quote verbatim from an actual statement that was made on Zeke's website under a post titled Compliance, Compliance, and More Compliance. They said, and I quote, "Do not," all capitalized, "advertise that there is no sponsoring or recruiting necessary to earn income. It is a fraudulent statement and is grounds for removal from this program, end quote. And that's not a typo. Okay, if you tell a prospect that they can actually make money in Zeek Rewards without recruiting by, God forbid, the actual sale of the product, you know, you don't have to have a downline, that is a terminatable offense, or excuse me, was a terminatable offense in Zeek Rewards. Now, at least here they're trying to be truthful, but the point is they inadvertently admit that this isn't based on selling anything. It's based on recruiting new distributors. In fact, there was an article, a very, very good article, that was written by Kevin Grimes, who I consider one of the best MLM attorneys out there. It was regarding a scheme called Big Smart, which was one that had an online shopping mall, which nobody makes any money from, because you get like a little tiny piece of a little tiny affiliate fee of all of the different things that are sold through the mall, and you got hundreds of thousands of competitors. So they charged several hundred dollars for the shopping mall itself and paid commissions on that, and that is a sales aid. The shopping mall itself is a sales aid, so that's non-commissionable, and in fact, this company was shut down as an illegal pyramid because that's not a commissionable item. Only a new distributor would buy the shopping mall. Kevin Grimes said in his article about this on his website, MLMlaw.com, legitimate MLMs never pay a commission on the sale of catalogs, marketing literature, starter kits, and other sales aids. Only retailable products and services are properly commissionable, end quote. And he's absolutely right, of course. Now, this, of course, begs the question, this is the final point I'll make. Well, then why was Kevin Grimes Zeek Rewards attorney? For that matter, Jerry Nira or Richard Walk? Why did Keith Lagos choose to be their consultant? Or any of these other people with great reputations, very confident people, why did they do this? Again, we have to separate those people that were supporting them and promoting them in some way and those people that were just doing their job. I have no doubt in my mind, I don't know this for a fact, because again, attorney-client privilege, they won't talk about it, I completely respect that, but I have no doubt in my mind, Kevin Grimes, Jerry Nira, and Richard Walk absolutely knew there were still huge flaws with this program. But they were hired to do a job, and they did it. And they did the best that they could do with what they had to work with. Now, unfortunately, a lot of other people used their good name and their credibility and their expertise as a promotional tool. They exploited this by saying, well, Zeek Rewards must have it together. They must be really getting things compliant because, well, they have Kevin Grimes and Jerry Nira and Richard Walk as their attorneys. Well, it's kind of like using the same logic as saying Ira Sorkin is one of the best defense attorneys ever. I mean, he's a legendary attorney. He's really, really great at his job. He's one of the most competent attorneys that you could ever hire. Therefore, Bernie Madoff must be innocent of doing anything wrong because his attorney is Ira Sorkin. Now, that wouldn't make any sense, right? You think, well, that's ridiculous. You know, Ira Sorkin is just an attorney doing his job, and Bernie Madoff was still obviously operating a huge Ponzi scheme, and he hired him to do the best he could with what he had to work with to defend him, and I would say, exactly. So just because you hire really great attorneys doesn't necessarily impart to you that you are perfectly legal. So in this case, what Zeek Rewards should have done to become completely legal, which, by the way, is what I am going to take responsibility for and publicly apologize for, because this is what I should have got. This is where I missed it. I didn't make any public comment on this company until, you know, I'd done this 35-page review, and it was weeks later, and they had kind of started to land in one place, and I sort of saw what it was changing into. I saw that the major challenges were not being fixed. It was still, in my opinion, a pyramid scheme, probably an unregistered security. So this is now I'm going to come out with all of this, and of course it was too late. 2 days later, I came out with it, and the SEC had already shut them down. What I should have done was I should have recognized much earlier that this was irreparable. There was no way. I mean, the greatest attorneys in the world could not have fixed this. I mean, Einstein can't make 1 plus 1 equal 3. So I don't care what the competency or the expertise was of who you hired to make this legal, it was irreparable. For example, you would have to have completely taken out the entire Matrix program and on the diamond and the gold, you know, packages. That would have to be completely stripped out because there was nothing redeeming about that part at all. And on the reward point side, you would had to have made the bids that you purchased commissionable only if you actually used them to bid with. to show that people were actually buying them with the motive to use them for what they were for. Now, there's a lot of legal precedent saying that if you buy something in lieu of a product, you can't commission it until you actually redeem it for the product. The old gold and silver programs, American Gold Eagle, Gold Unlimited, things like that, back in the early 90s, you bought vouchers that you accumulated and eventually redeemed them for gold coins, but they paid commissions on the vouchers. So at that time, there was just cash going back and forth. Passport to Adventure. Out of Florida, you accumulated these travel certificates, and eventually you redeemed all these certificates for actual travel, but they paid commissions on the travel certificates, not travel. And they said, that's a pyramid scheme. You can't pay commissions on it until you actually redeem them for travel. So here, if you were to say, you can't just buy bids and give them away as a sales aid and convert them to cash and start making this, or to points, which then get you cash, you've got to use it to bid with. So here's why it would have fallen apart if they did that. There was already rampant bid inflation. By that I mean, if you bought $10,000 worth of bids and you had to convert them to points so you could get paid on them in the pool, you knew that you had to give away 10,000 bids. And you think, well, okay, I'm going to give them away and essentially get nothing. But if I gave them away to someone who's going to bid on behalf of me, I can at least get maybe a $500 iPad out of it or something like that. So I give all my bids away to friends and family members, have them bid, or even if, by the way, even if Don was wrong and you can use your own bids, Zeek Rewards distributors could use your own bids for bidding, let's say that instead of 98% giving them away, they all decided to use them to bid with, to make them legally commissionable. So I'm thinking like, hey, well, I'm going to give them away and get nothing, so I might as well give them away and get something. So this is why we were already seeing, we saw this a lot, like $500 iPad selling for $1,500. Now, why would someone bid up $1,500 on a $500 iPad? Well, because you had to give the bids away anyway and get nothing for them. So isn't getting a $500 iPad better than nothing? And by the way, there are a lot of excuses like shills and things like that were causing that to happen. No, it wasn't. People would just rather get something for nothing. So here, 10 people, take 1,000 of my bids and go bid up this iPad and get me an iPad so at least I get something out of my $10,000 of bids I had to give away. You know, or whatever it is, the item. I saw all kinds of items that were selling for way more than the retail value of the product. So it was already bid inflation that was already really watering down the entire penny auction side of the company. Imagine if that 98%, you had to use it for bidding. This massive tsunami of bids were to suddenly come in from people going, all right, well, you know, these won't convert to points and I can't get paid on the pool unless I bid with them. So I might as well pile the whole $10,000 on that $500 iPad. At least I can get a $500 iPad out of it or whatever. In other words, they would always overbid things thinking I'd rather get something for nothing. I got to convert these to points by bidding. So the bid inflation would have been far greater than it already is. It would have just swamped and eventually, I mean, anyone who's an actual penny auction customer at Zeekler wouldn't have stood a chance against all these thousands of Zeek Rewards distributors just dumping their bids in there to try to get them converted to points. The whole thing would have just fallen apart and died a natural death of attrition. The model was irreparable. This couldn't have been fixed. And I should have acknowledged that sooner and just said, look, I'm not going to wait till this thing's done. This stuff can't change and have it still be a viable opportunity. So even if they did fix it, it's still going to go away. And I should have come out forward and probably, hopefully, saved, who knows, maybe nobody would have taken my advice ever. But at least I might have saved somebody one $10,000 investment somewhere. And if I were to apologize for that, which I do, because of what I didn't do in time and what I should have done, I'm going to be the only one who's apologizing for anything they ever said about Zeek. I have resigned from the Association of Network Marketing Professionals. This was an association, is an association, that's designed to help protect and educate distributors. At our March event, we showcased Zeek Rewards as a model of compliance and had their corporate people up on the stage. High-level people on the board supported them and defended them. And there has never been any public apology, no recognition of the mistake, nothing. In my case, my mistake, which I do apologize for, is I definitely should have not tried to get everything in order all at once at the end and just blow out this one giant expose. I should have come out sooner and said, look, I don't care how this thing changes. It's not going to get fixed. Stay the hell away from it. And I tell you right now, this is a mistake I will never make again. I'm going to start in this. I started this a little bit a couple years ago, but I'm going to do this now with this new Inside Network Marketing site, an interview segment called The Kitchen. as in if you can't stand the heat, stay out of. Because I don't want anyone to come back and say I ambushed them, or I hit them with a bunch of questions they weren't expecting, and they blindsided them, or you know, whatever. They're going to know going in that there are no rules. I get to ask all the questions I want to ask. They don't have to answer them, of course, but nothing's off the table. I get to ask all the challenging questions I want, all the questions everyone else is asking or would like someone to ask. It's not going to be a bunch of underhanded softballs and blowing love kisses like most of these interviews that you hear out there are. I have, as I understand, a tentative interview segment set up with Jeff Olson at Nerium, which is great. I mean, I love it when these guys can just, you know, stand up and say, yeah, I know what I'm in for here, but I'm going to, yeah, I'll sit in that seat in the kitchen and take your questions. People have nothing to hide, tend not to hide. So I think that's great. Good for him. And I'll try to get to that as soon as I can as well, too. Good company, but I've got some questions I would like to ask him about that product and his compensation plan. I would love to get somebody from Amiga, you know, that's the magic wand. I don't know, but they won't talk to me. I've already tried. But anyway, that's what's going to come up. And I'm going to ask those types of tough questions. And so hopefully we'll keep that going. I got a feeling what will eventually happen is just no one will agree to be interviewed by me. But hey, so be it. Like I said, if you don't have anything to hide, you shouldn't have to hide. So I just want to leave you again by just summarizing this one point. This company is not coming back anywhere, under any condition, and any lawsuit against the SEC is folly. Do not donate funds to that. Because first of all, I'd want to know if this lawsuit doesn't happen, or if it gets thrown out immediately, which it probably will, where are those $100,000, $200,000 that gets collected? Are we all going to get that money back? Where's that money going? So again, don't get screwed twice on this, all right? Don't donate. The SEC lawsuit is ridiculous, because again, even if this does go to trial and they say you're not a Ponzi, they say you're not even in registered security, it's definitely going to be a pyramid. So this thing is not coming back. Walk away. Go do something else. I completely agree with Troy on this. Stay away from the penny auction niche. We don't even know where that whole segment is going to go, MLM or otherwise. And find a good home with a good, solid product of value that people actually buy, because they're, even if they don't have an opportunity involved. Okay? That's what you should be focusing on. I will see you again. Again, probably it'll be another 2 or 3 week delay. Then I'll start doing these more regularly, because I do want to keep them going. But I'll see you again, you know, very soon. And hopefully, we'll have another interview segment set up with someone interested. And so stay tuned and keep looking at your MarketWave alerts as they come in for future announcements. All right, thanks a lot, everybody.